So I discovered golf quite late in life. It's been brilliant for me because in my challenging moments throughout my life, my place to go to, my happy place, if you like, was my local golf course, because you could just go away in that beautiful countryside, beautiful fresh air, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, and just get away from the world when you needed to get away from the world. And I always say, get my emotional equilibrium back.
Hi, and welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. At Golf Yourself Healthy, we all share one simple belief, that golf is good for you. You, as our listener, community members, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, if you're listening to the podcast, then you're a member of the Golf Yourself Healthy community. And now, after 5 or 6 episodes of this podcast, you've heard me talk about my take on how golf has been good for me. You've heard the guests that we've had so far talk about how golf has been good for them. Before we get into today's episode, I would love to hear from you, our listeners, our community members, directly. You can contact me directly on chris@golfyourselfhealthy.com. You'll find the address, the email address listed on our website, golfyourselfhealthy.com. My call to action to you is to get in touch with me directly because, I mean, amongst other things, it can be a bit of a lonely place up here when I'm podcasting and putting this out there. And I just love to hear from you. How is golf good for you? Tell me in your own words, contact me at chris@golfyourselfhealthy.com. Just to let you know, I'm a Chris with a K, a kicking Chris, as I was referred to back in my school days, not a C-H-R-I-S Chris, a K-R-I-S@golfyourselfhealthy.com. So get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. How is golf good for you? And actually, also just get in touch with any comments. How are you finding the podcast? What are you liking about it? What could we do differently? What other ideas have you got to help this podcast grow? So let's get on to a word of introduction, scene setting for today's episode. In today's episode, I'm in conversation with Anthony Blackburn, who is the founder of Golf in Society and a self-confessed smoggy. What's a smoggy, you ask? Well, you know the score. You're going to have to stick around and listen to the episode in full to find out what a smoggy is. Golf in Society, who, as I mentioned, Anthony has founded around about 8 years ago now in 2016, they specialize in transforming the lives of our aging population by introducing them to the wonderful game of golf. They put golf at the heart of local communities by delivering tailored golf sessions for those living with chronic illnesses like dementia, Parkinson's, loneliness, depression, and many more. And given what we stand for here at Golf Yourself Healthy, it was a no-brainer really to invite Anthony onto the podcast. And on a personal level, what stood out more is how Anthony has, as you will hear in this conversation, he has taken inspiration from his father's life and memory and the golfing memories that they shared together to create something good, which not only honours a loved one and keeps their memory alive, but in doing so, Anthony is doing something for the good of society as a whole. This episode is packed full of sentimental and feel-good vibes, but equally some tender and vulnerable moments too. The episode was recorded on site at Rudding Park Golf Club in Harrogate, North Yorkshire. A really great resort, a great setup they have there. A real point that, amongst other things that I loved, they've got a short course, a 6-hole course, as well as an 18-hole championship course. Testing out that 6-hole course is just a must-do. If you're a really keen golfer, all 6 of those par 3 holes are modelled on and mimic an iconic golf hole from different courses and places around the world. The standout one is the mimic of the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass, the 5th hole at the Repton course at Rudding Park, and I took 7 off the tee to get on the green there. I had 4 stabs off the tee to get there. You can see that on Instagram at Golf Yourself Healthy if you want to watch my successful attempt, you know, because obviously I kind of want people to believe that I got it in 1, but I didn't, 7 off the tee. But great facility there. But back to the context of today's episode, what I saw really pointed to a golf venue which is striving to be diverse, inclusive, and accessible. And having been welcomed with open arms into Rudding Park on the day of this podcast by Anthony and his team of staff and volunteers at Golf in Society, it was a really moving and heartwarming experience that day, because Anthony allowed me to observe a golf session being delivered to some of his customers who, like I mentioned, are living with some of these conditions, you know, dementia, Alzheimer's, etc., like I mentioned before. And it was really moving. And actually, when I was there and witnessed it, it made me reflect nostalgically, if that's even a word, reflect with nostalgia and sentimentally around, you know, these people were similar to my granddad's generation, for example, and thinking about my recollection of my fond life memories of my grandparents. But it also got me thinking about just golfing memories, life memories and golf memories with loved ones. And so, again, what I'd love to hear once this conversation is over today, I'd love to hear from you, get in contact directly, and I'd love to know more about your nostalgic golf memories that you've experienced and would love to reflect on with loved ones over the years. And just tying into this theme of nostalgia, then, we've just released our latest Golf Yourself Healthy Journal article, which is on golfyourselfhealthy.com, which is entitled Golf Yourself Nostalgic. And it takes you, me, back to a time around 4 years ago when I created some really wonderful nostalgic memories with a golf context wrapped around it with my dear mother. So please go and check that out, have a read. And as ever, there'll be links in the show notes that you can follow us on socials, get in touch directly through the website, as I've mentioned. But enough of that. Let's jump straight into the conversation with Anthony. Anthony, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much to responding to the call and the invitation. You know, thank you also for just taking a bit of time to show me around Rudding Park today. Again, as I've tried to do as much as possible with the early episodes of this podcast, is go to my guest. And I've been saying it to a few of your colleagues around here today, it's just the conversations you get when you have them in person just become a lot richer and the connection is deeper. But I think what is especially special about this particular episode and the place that I'm coming to do it, I mean, first of all, Harrogate's a lovely place. I've been here once or twice before, and lots to like about Harrogate. There's a lot to like about Rudding Park here as well, but as we're going to get into in the course of this conversation, what you are doing with Golf in Society is pretty remarkable to see it firsthand. You know, I've done a bit of research on you and Golf in Society in advance, but the feels are great here, you know?
Well, thank you for those kind words. And I'm glad that the first impression of your time here in North Yorkshire, especially Harrogate, have been positive ones today.
Yeah.
And as you say, Rudding Park is just an amazing venture for our social enterprise. We've been collaborating with them now for 6 years. And from day one, the hospitality, the experience that Rudding Park have put on for my customers to come here and have a VIP golf and hospitality experience has been amazing. And it takes great people with a great attitude that understand what we're trying to achieve that make that happen, really. And without great people and the right philosophy, we wouldn't be able to achieve what we achieve. And Rudding Park is a shining example of how a golf venue, a resort, can step up and really make a difference within the local community.
Yeah, definitely. It's a place that, you know, after today's conversation, I'm going to, before I make the trip back to Wales, you know, going to walk around. Maybe I've got the clubs in the boot, so I might get out and have a knock. And I was saying to you before we went on air as well, I've just bought a tent box for the top of my car. So seeing that there's a holiday park here, I'm going to have to go home and say to my wife, do you know what's great about Rudding Park? You know, I've got the business case ready already, Anthony. But, you know, I'm going to say to you now as well, and almost like a heads up and almost like a word of warning to you and to the listener as well, I sense the way I'm feeling today is that, I might get emotional throughout the course of this conversation, because there are things in your story which we're going to get into, which are, I find, very relatable in terms of your inspiration for Golf in Society, why you're doing it, some of the people I've even met today. You know, talking about mental health and things as well, I've just recently stopped taking antidepressants after having been on them for about 5 years. And I can feel again, you know, and I can feel emotion and I can cry and I can, and which is great. Fundamentally, that's great. I'm at a stage in my life where I can do that. I'm comfortable to do that. But, you know, if the waterworks go through this conversation, I'm not going to apologize to you or to anyone. Someone I spoke to recently, who I hope will be a guest on this pod in future, said, it's a shame that society almost sometimes, like, or you feel the need to apologize as a man when you get emotional. So I'm just giving you that heads up now. So.
No problem at all. I'll make sure we've got some Kleenex on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. Or even another bit, that lovely flapjack. We'll probably...
Homemade.
That'll tide me through, I'm sure. So Anthony, I'm going to kick this off with a segment in this podcast we like to call The Spirit of Your Game. So it's really asking you to tell us about, you know, what is golf to you? How did you get into it? You know, what are the memories, the early memories? Why is golf special to you?
Well, in my early years, golf wasn't that special to me, really. But I've always been mad about sport. My father, who was my inspiration behind Golfing Society and my social mission, he was mad about sport and he introduced me to the wonders of sport when I was young. Football and cricket were my things when I was younger. And my first experience of golf, really, was when I came back on holiday, back up into North Yorkshire. Dad was a member of a local golf course and he said, do you fancy a game of golf after work? I said, yeah, I'll give it a go. And at that stage, I was coming towards the end of my football and my cricketing career. The eyesight were going, the legs weren't as quick as they used to be. And I gave it a go and I thought, you know what, I like this. And I thought, when I give up my cricket totally and I give up my football, this could be my new thing. Because I can't really, as an individual, imagine a day without sport in my life. There are two things that make me tick as an individual, sport and music. And three things really, my family too. And if they're in the heart of my life, that's really all I need to survive. I'm a person of simple needs, really. But sport, music, and my family are probably the three things that make me tick as an individual. So I discovered golf quite late in life. I was 27, 28 when I first picked up a club and gave it a go. But it's been brilliant for me because in my challenging moments throughout my life, my place to go to, my happy place, if you like, was my local golf course, because you could just go away in that beautiful countryside, beautiful fresh air, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, and just get away from the world when you needed to get away from the world. And I always say, get my emotional equilibrium back. And possibly think through some of the challenges and think about ways of dealing with those challenges that you're facing in life. And then come back home feeling refreshed and feeling as though that's all out of the way and you can get on and start living life and enjoying life again. So I find golf therapeutic to myself. But I suppose really what we've discovered also is that for people facing challenges later in life, especially a dementia diagnosis or a Parkinson's diagnosis, loneliness and depression, the types of families we support, they find it very therapeutic too, really. So I think that therapeutic strength of golf is misunderstood, really. Golf has still got a bad reputation. I know when I was growing up, it was seen as something that old people played. It was, you needed to be of a professional background, have lots of money to actually even get involved. The waiting list for golf clubs, you had to be interviewed by the board of a club to actually, and be put forward by somebody to actually even get a foot in the door. That's completely changed now, but I'm not sure that all of those reputations about golf have changed in the wider psyche of society. So I think it is still seen as elitist, exclusive, and very time intensive and expensive. But as you've seen here today at Rudding Park, golf can be enjoyed in so many different ways, in so many bite-sized chunks that can benefit so many people in so many different ways. And I think that is the real message we need to get through in the future. I know for myself, till I pop my clogs, golf will always be part of my life. And if I can make it part of other people's lives for their later years, their golden years, as I call them, then that's going to be a great legacy to leave behind, really.
Definitely. Just reflecting on a few things you said there. I mean, what you're saying about golf historically having, you know, been carried with a certain reputation, being quite elitist and things. The golf is on a journey, I think I would say. And I think from, you know, I'd like to think you would agree, given that you're in the thick of it here, is a facility like this is a good example of trying to shift that from, you know, but at the same time, there's still plenty of work to do, I think, in the broader sense around getting that message out there. But I wanted to ask you, so you're from Teesside originally, you said?
I am. Yeah. As they would say, I'm a smog head because of the old ACI factories and all of this, the smoke that used to come
that's
out of
them. That's where that comes from.
So that's where the little, I suppose, term of endearments, smog head or smoggy, comes from, really.
So where did you play your golf in those? You said you took it on your late 20s and. Is that where you played golf?
I was never a member, really, until probably I was in my sort of early 40s, mm-hmm. really. So I just played a little bit of what I would call society golf. If my friends went away for a weekend, maybe take some clubs with us and just to basically have a knock somewhere. So I was very much a social golf. I'd play in some corporate days and that type of thing, but never really having it as my sort of sporting fix. And being a member of a club until sort of early 40s, really. So I probably had maybe, you know, 13, 14 years of, or maybe a little bit more than that, of playing a bit of golf, but social golf, and then took it up seriously in my sort of early 40s.
Okay, great. You said that your father is your inspiration. What was his name, first of all?
Dad was called John.
John.
John Anthony.
Okay.
That's where I get my Anthony from.
Excellent. But tell us a bit more about him as a person.
Well, I think as an individual, I'm very blessed that I've had a great mum and a great dad that basically shaped me as a young person. I was so happy to have them as parents. They were both loving parents. And they gave me opportunities. They gave me a great framework in which to grow up, really. And I think that's really important for all young people. And I feel tremendously lucky that my mum and dad gave me that. From an early stage, dad introduced me to sport. I mean, I remember the first time I ever went to a cricket match. Mum was pushing me around the boundary at Thornaby Cricket Club, where Dad was out in the middle bowling, really. So even in a little pram, going around the boundary, that was, you know, my first introduction to sport. And at the first opportunity, we would always be outside, we'd always be playing. Dad would always have sort of football or a cricket ball and a set of stumps and a cricket bat for us to sort of play with. So from a very early age, Dad took his love of sport and brought it into our lives as well. But we spent most of our time outdoors, and some of my favourite childhood memories were in great outdoor spaces. And, you know, Mum and Dad were great at getting us out and about. And I think that stayed with me throughout my life, really. But Dad as an individual, he was a joiner by trade. Mm-hmm. One of the first things he ever did, really, when he was working for the co-op, is he actually made coffins. So that was one of his first roles, really, using his joinery skills to build coffins. But throughout his life, he was always very handy, loved making things and fixing things. And that stayed with him throughout his life, really. He ended up working in the Middle East for Taylor Woodrow. He worked in Zambia on the Kariba Dam. So he had a great, I suppose, career in that sort of traditional skills industries, mm-hmm. and thoroughly enjoyed it. And we got a chance as a family to sort of travel and see some of those countries as well. So for that, I'm extremely grateful. But behind my dad, and they always say behind every great man is a great woman, and my mother was definitely that to my dad and to us as a family, as a mother. So mum, just as important as dad in terms of bringing me up as an individual and giving me my life values. But very much, my mum is still with us today, 82-year-old, and she's an inspiration to all of us. I hope I'm as fit and happy and healthy and active, even with certain illnesses that mum's got, like arthritis, at 82, mm-hmm. because, as I say, she's an inspiration to everybody, really, I think.
Great. So John, and your mother's name is?
Lillian.
Lillian. Fantastic. Great. She sounds like a fantastic person. So I guess thinking about, you know, nostalgia and the memories and times of, you know, because from things you've explained, you know, you and your dad would play golf together. So I'm going to ask you, in this context of golf yourself nostalgic, is there a particular memory that you have of a time spent with your dad in a golfing context that you like to recount?
So many, and so thankful that towards the end of Dad's life, he died of cancer 16 years ago. We had the chance to enjoy time together at golf clubs, playing holes, and then eventually just maybe having a chat and a beer towards the end of his illness. But ultimately, very special memories, and so thankful that I spent that time with him. However, the one standout was that at one stage in Mum and Dad's life, they were working down in the sort of Windsor area. And one of the gentlemen that was doing work with Dad at the time had a job in the clubhouse at Wentworth. So the gentleman said, "Do you play golf?" And Dad said, "Yes, I play golf." "Well, would you like to play Wentworth?" And Dad said, "Yes, please." So he got on the phone to me and said, "Son, we've got a chance to play Wentworth. Do you fancy it?" "Well, of course." "Yes, please, Dad. Just tell me when I've got to be there." However, he could only get us some tee off times at about 5:30 in the morning before the members started arriving and everything else. So with my dad, I had the opportunity to play the East, the West, and the Edinburgh golf courses at Wentworth, all at about 5:30 in the morning. But to me, you talk about priceless memories and nostalgia. That to me is the one that really stands out, to play all those three iconic courses with your dad. Yeah, don't get better than that.
No, I guess not. That's, and the lengths we go to play golf, going out at 5:30 in the morning as well, you know, sounds like something I would do as well. If you don't mind me sort of going here, Anthony, and asking about this as well. So shortly we'll get into talking about, you know, golf and society, take inspiration from your father's life. But when I look on the, for example, on the Golf and Society website, you've got a video where you talk about the inspiration behind it, and you're in your dad's shed. And you spark up a memory for me when I see that, which is my dad's dad, Jim, was very like your dad in the sense that he was very, he liked to create things with his hands. He, you know, he would, and so he had this little hobby of his where he made, like, he had like the jigsaw and he would cut out wood and like sort of make cartoon characters. So he would do, there's a cartoon character in Scotland called Oor Willy, and there's others he did, like Bart Simpson and Laurel and Hardy. Right. So in fact, actually, if anyone is familiar with Aberdeen Airport and you fly in, and there's a road that kind of comes out of Aberdeen Airport along the, just the, runs parallel to the runway. And when you come into Stonywood, which is a neighboring town, every time I go back there and I'm at the traffic lights, I see Granddad's Laurel and Hardy that he sold to some guy on his shed staring right back at me.
That's,
and it's such a wonderful reminder. But seeing you in your dad's shed in that video takes me back to a time soon after Granddad passed, when the music was still on in the shed. Like, you know, I think my dad and my uncle had left the extension lead into his shed, and you walked in and it was like he was still there.
Amazing.
You know? So what's it like for you being in his shed?
Well, it's interesting actually, because when I first went into that shed when Dad passed away, I sort of saw his back catalogue of golf clubs. He was a great one, according to my mum, of buying something from the bargain bucket outside, or the bargain bag outside the pro shop back in those days, everything a five or whatever it was. And he'd always come home with a new club. And Mum would say, "Not another club." He said, "Yeah, but I might just need this at some stage. You never know." Anyway, interesting enough, one of the clubs I found was an Odyssey putter. For those in who don't understand golf, Odyssey is one of the top brands in terms of putter manufacturers. And I found this in his shed, and it was the putter that he had used. And I picked it out of his bag and I gave it a go, and it's still with me today. So what is it now, 16 years on, I still use my dad's putter. The only thing I've done is change the grip, put a slightly wider grip on it. But ultimately, I feel as though my dad is with me every time I play golf, because I'm using his putter. Mm. And dad's putting during his career was amazing. He said it was because of his work in sort of the joinery trade, really. He could see a line. He could look down a piece of wood and see whether it was straight or not. And he would just stand over a ball on a putting green. And I would say he's not even looking at that. And he just hit it straight in the hole. Had an amazing natural talent for reading a line and being a great putter. And I think his inspiration is definitely in me, because that's the best part of my game, the putting. And having his putter in my bag every time I step onto a golf course is like my dad is with me, guiding me all the time. So I sense that he's with me all the time, and I take great comfort out of that, because I think when you lose a loved one, it's a matter of finding the right place for them in your life.
Yes.
Once you've gone over the initial, you know, grieving and everything. And I've definitely found a place in my life for my dad's inspiration to be with me all the time. And I definitely feel this as if he's guiding me with what I'm doing with golf in society as well. I look back now when we started 7 years ago, and did I think I would be here today, 7 years on? Met the great people, got the great collaborators, made such a difference to people's lives in the way that we do. I think, no, I think my dad's been guiding me. So along with the physical guidance and love and support of my mum here and now, I sense that spiritually my dad is guiding me too. So I think I've still got that really strong mum and dad network around me almost, although they're in different places and inspiring me in different ways. But I sense, you know, they're both guiding me to do what we're doing now, making a difference to other people's lives.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you never know, maybe one day you and I'll get out in the golf course together and I'll watch, you know, I'll see the putting for myself and see your dad's putting talent, the prowess kind of channeled through that way.
But... Well, it's very interesting you say that, but spiritually and inspirationally, my dad's putter works for everybody because I take it to different courses, as you know. We've got 23 venues now that we work with. And it puts well everywhere. The putter works well everywhere. But then I give it to other people who may be struggling a bit with the putting. And I say, do you want a bit of inspiration? Here, use my dad's putter for a couple of putts. And all of a sudden, they start knocking it in the hole. I said, I told you, it's magic. This is a magic putter. And I feel as though that inspires others to think, I can give this game a go. But yeah, it's interesting how that sort of magic wand inspires not just me, but others to feel, oh, I can give this game a go.
Thank you for sharing that, Anthony. And I think I've talked in a journal in a previous podcast about one of the, I think the very first time I went out on the golf course after I lost my son, Innes, I was stood over this putt. It was a fairly lengthy one. And I thought of Innes and I thought, do it for Innes. And it went in. I have never dared to sort of like ask a putt to go in his name ever again. Because if I miss it, I don't want to have a resentment toward you. Know, but it's what I like. More, you know, there's so much I like about the story that you've just told, but it's reassuring more than anything. And I'm sure listeners listening to this will find the same, is just having the memory of your loved one with you and it for it to have that, you know, positive impact. You know, it's that you carry them with you and it's lovely. So thank you.
Totally. And I think people grieve in different ways and people take inspiration from their family and, you know, members of the family that are no longer here. And they all deal with it in different ways. I found a very positive place for my dad to be still in my life, even though he's not physically here. And I think really all I would say to your listeners is if you can try and find a positive place in your life for your loved ones who are no longer here, then I think you're going to benefit longer term for that. But it's not easy for everybody. And sometimes it takes a bit longer for people. But if over a period of time you can find that those happy memories and those happy inspirations around that individual that was such a great part of you, your family, your growing up, then I think you'll find great solace in that.
Absolutely. Let's go on then to talk about Golf and Society. So introduce Golf and Society to listener. What is it? Who is it for? You know, how is it started, etc.?
Yeah, well, we've talked about the inspiration behind Golf and Society. We started the social enterprise in 2016. And the social mission really was to put golf clubs at the heart of local communities. And then once we've done that, to offer opportunities for people like my dad facing challenges later in life to come and enjoy that sport fix, that experience, the opportunity to socialize in beautiful natural surroundings and keep that sport in their life for as long as possible. Dad, as we've talked about earlier, was mad about sport, and that was one of the things that made him tick along with music. And those were the things we needed to keep in his life, really. And when Dad passed away, I got to thinking there must be loads of people out there like my dad that just need that opportunity. And I found that there weren't that many opportunities, really, to keep enjoying that sport fix. So that was the idea. I was a retailer by trade, and basically a lot of skills are transferable to what I do today. But I lost my retail business back in, you know, about 2012. And that was a hard time for me. Dad had passed away, lost my business. And also, marriage had broke down as a result. So pretty dark place. And from that moment, that's when I started thinking about what the second half of my life looks like. I call it my what's it all about Alfie moment for the older listeners. And I love sport. I love people. I loved helping people. And you know, I needed to be there for my family as well, my mum and my sister, who with myself had survived dad's passing. So I just sort of sat down and thought, how do I put all of that into my second half of my life, really? And to pay the bills, I decided to go into a caring role. So I worked for a domiciliary care company called Home Instead. And I basically went into people's homes and got them up on a day, took them out for a great day out, and put them to bed safely at night. And I thoroughly enjoyed that, giving people the chance to get out and about and enjoy life on a daily basis. But the part about that I really enjoyed was the bit in the middle where you took people out and gave them a great experience. So with that sort of caring, if you like, expertise in place, I then started looking at golf, and I started looking at whether or not there was anything out there that basically kept people like my dad to help him keep enjoying his sporting experience. And there wasn't really. So that's where the idea came from. And then I just reached out to the Alzheimer's Society, to England Golf at the time, and we came up with a venue in Lincoln, which became the first ever dementia-friendly golf club in the world. And to actually get my idea up and running, I took a day off my caring role on a Thursday, and I travelled every Thursday down to Lincoln from North Yorkshire to deliver a golf session for people who'd enjoyed a sporting life and just needed that sporting fix in their life. And from one initial customer back in 2016, we quickly grew to having 8 customers. And as they say, the rest is almost history in terms of how we've shown how golf clubs can become heart of the local community. But that first, if you like, opportunity came my way because of a bit of what I call faith capital, which came from an organization called Unlimited, who sponsor social entrepreneurs like me to give their idea a go. So I got £5,000 worth of faith capital. They called it a Do It Award, and I tested my idea. So that covered my costs of getting to Lincoln every week and proving the concept. So with the proof of concept, we then came to North Yorkshire, set up the first ever Parkinson's friendly golf club here at Rudding Park, where we are today. And then I got the opportunity to do first ever dementia-friendly golf venue in Scotland, which was the catalyst for our growth in Scotland. And we sit here today with over 20 venues where people like my dad and others can come into their local golf club and have a great day out, socializing, enjoying their sporting fix, the camaraderie and banter that comes with having the opportunity to get to your local golf club. But most importantly, I suppose, and I didn't really think about this when I started Golf in Society, is it's the respite support and the additional well-being support that we provide for the unpaid carers, who to me are the unsung heroes of society. So they get the opportunity just to chat, to socialise, to go off and meet the grandkids, to do whatever they want to do in that window of opportunity that we give them every single week. And I think that's the beauty of our service. We don't just help people like my dad. We help people like my mum, who was a carer for my dad. So basically we're helping...
These are the carers.
The unpaid carers, yeah. So basically we're providing an opportunity for that family unit to enjoy the services that we offer at local golf clubs. And that's what I think is unique and special about what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I guess I'm gonna bring it in at this point. So we have a segment in the podcast, which I like to call The Eagle Has Landed. And for anyone out there that's not sure, I mean, I'm going to test my historical knowledge. I mean, I'm sure people know what it refers to, but ultimately the idea is like mission complete. Like I've witnessed something or something's happened in the golfing context that, you know, that's achieved what I wanted to achieve. And traditionally I've asked a guest to do this remembering a particular golf shot that they've hit. Now, I'm going to ask you, based on the people that you see attending your sessions, can you give an example of almost like a golf experience that you've seen them have and what it's done for them in this context of golf being good for you almost?
Well, it's interesting we're here at Rudding Park today because a carer, a gentleman who is no longer with us, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and another gentleman who played football for Harrogate Town, have now one thing in common that they never had before they joined Golf in Society. They've all had a hole in one. And they've all had it here at Rudding Park.
And you've witnessed this, haven't
and
you?
And I've witnessed this. Amazing. So people said to me when I started Golf in Society, you're going to teach people with all of these challenges to discover golf. You must be crazy. There's no chance you're going to do that. So you tell me how we've inspired 3 people, all of different backgrounds, all with different challenges, to all witness that holy grail moment in golf, which is to have a hole in one. And if I can just give you an idea of how exciting and enjoyable that was for people, it was almost like you'd given, you know, for Jim, who played decent football, it was like he'd won the FA Cup. For the carer, it was like you'd given her a winning lottery ticket. And for the gentleman with Parkinson's, you know, he struggled to get around the golf course because of his mobility. But for him to be in that moment and witness that and then get to sign the hole-in-one golf book here at Rudding Park, that is there forever. So that's what we inspired them to do, really. And now they've all got, one of them's no longer with us, but they all had that special moment that they shared together that they had a hole-in-one. And that, to me, is just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just even hearing you talk about it, I would love to have observed, witnessed something like that. But it then leads me into asking, and I'll ask you a few more questions before we wrap up, because I know you've got other things to be getting on with your day. But in the course of the work that you do in golf and society, I sense that you're also, call it like a natural curiosity, or it comes with the job, is looking at the actual medical, clinical, research side of things as well. And so you have a podcast actually that you've got that's running alongside Golf and Society, which I would invite my listeners to go and listen to, because there's obviously only so much you and I are going to get into to have the time to talk about today. But I believe I've learned a lot from listening to it. I'm sure my listeners will do too. But in one of your most recent episodes, you're in conversation with a guy called Charlie Foster. And what's his background, remind me?
Charlie is a bit of a guru in activity.
Yeah.
And to be honest, he's been a great ambassador in terms of what we do as Golf in Society, but sharing with policymakers in particular the therapeutic benefits of golf, why it's good for your physical health, your mental health, your social health and everything else. And really, he's put a great presentation together, which is why the world should play golf. And to me, in that presentation, it says everything about why golf is great for everyone in life.
And so what's the kind of the cut and thrust of that? Like what, because I remember listening to you talking in that podcast about having been at a conference where you heard him deliver that presentation. So what's the kind of core message that, I mean, obviously the core message is golf is good for you, but what are the kind of key sound bites or takeaways that really bring to life this idea of golf being good for you?
Well, the interesting thing for me is that golf is seen as an individual sport, but as you've seen today, and you'll see with all of our sessions, we bring people together and we put them in teams, and there's that collaboration, that sense of belonging. And you know, and I think that it's fun and it's enjoyable. And golf can be fun. It can be very frustrating at times, but ultimately golf is fun and golf can be enjoyed by anybody. Mm-hmm. So if you give people the opportunity to do it together, make it fun, then all the great things about access to green space, opportunity to learn new skills later in life, it stimulates the brain, it stimulates the body, and it stimulates the soul holistically every time you get involved in golf. And if you demystify a golf swing is great for your balance, it's great for your coordination. It really does, as Charlie would say in his podcast, improve your neuroplasticity. Never even realized I could say that word a few years ago, but it basically helps your brain, it helps your body. And the good thing about having people like Charlie on board is it demystifies all of that. And it allows us to speak a different language about what we do. I talk a lot about hope, sense of purpose, a reason to get out of bed on a morning, a chance to have something to look forward to in life. Well, that's what we do. But behind all of that, there are so many other things from a physical, a mental and a social perspective as to why a person's health and well-being improves. So we've evidenced a lot through the research that we've done in terms of the impact that it has on the body, mind, and soul.
Yeah.
But we make it fun. We make it enjoyable. We make it something that people can do together. And we give everybody the opportunity to engage with it. Mm. And I think in the way we've designed the service and the way we've now evidenced the outcomes, whether you look at it from a health and social care perspective, whether medical perspective, whether just enjoying a great life perspective, you know, that life satisfaction thing, whichever way you cut it, golf is great for you. And we are demystifying the whole game of golf, the whole thing about golf clubs being exclusive and elitist, and really breaking down those barriers is one of the best things we've done. And we're getting people to think differently about golf. Mm. And I've really struggled in certain stakeholder groups, especially health and social care, to get them to understand golf. And I always say the best way you can ever understand the difference we make to people's lives, whether that be the person living with a diagnosis, or whether that be the unpaid carer or the wider family network we support, come and see us in action. You've seen us today. You've seen what it's all about. So my open invitation to anybody out there that likes what we do, would like to think differently about how they can build this into people's everyday activity programs, health and wellbeing programs, come and see us. You will see the difference we make and how inclusive we've made it and how we create opportunities for all. So it's an open invitation at all of our 20-odd venues for anybody out there interested to come and see us in action.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Well, a couple other bits before we wrap up. So just very briefly, I mean, something that I find quite compelling in things that I've heard you say is about how it's been a 7 or 8 year journey for you so far with Coffin Society. And it sounds like in those early days, there was a lot of kind of knocking on doors, trying to get, figuratively speaking, and get people to buy in, which sounded like it took time for you to be heard and taken seriously. Is that fair to say?
That is totally fair to say. We were a nobody.
Yeah.
We were, I mean, Anthony Blackburn, not a golf professional, mm-hmm. no ologies behind his name or anything, just a great idea with the inspiration of his dad. And that's where we started the journey, really. But over the years, we've got some good ambassadors in place and we've got a bit of traction now. But yeah, it was hard to start with.
So I guess then it leads me to the question, which is whether it's, you know, what you've done or anyone out there that's listening that has this, an idea forming and it's a passion or it's a finding a new purpose or it's a career change or whatever it is, you know, what's, in those early days of trying to get something off the ground, what's the best piece of advice you would give?
Remember why you started. Remember the difference you're making. And I remember those journeys back from Lincoln when I was traveling down there every single Thursday to deliver and prove my concept. Remembering the smiles, the differences, the conversations you had after the golf as to how it had made a difference and how thankful they were. That was all the inspiration you need. In those formative years to realize that I was doing the right thing. And that gave me the determination and the resilience to break down these barriers, which have taken a long time and there are still a few out there. But ultimately, that burnt my fire within me to make a difference because I realized that these families needed this support. So I think to anybody out there thinking of making a difference, setting up their own social enterprise, changing society for better, then remember why you started and keep doing the right thing for the right reason often enough. And I believe amazing things really do happen.
Brilliant. Anthony, I'll just say one more thing to you before we wrap up. So, you know, when I was, this idea of Golf Yourself Healthy was forming and I was building it and I was kind of pitching the idea to people. There's a guy I can think of who I met through my professional network whose opinion and counsel I respect a lot. And, you know, I was talking to him about my why and that fire that burns inside and my purpose and everything. And he said to me what I'm going to say to you, which is the world needs you. And I would give the same message to anyone else out there as well who has this calling, who has this, they're doing it for these sorts of reasons because, yeah, the world needs more, I suppose.
It does. And I would say to anyone out there who wants to shape a better future for society and for themselves, because there's loads of people at the minute stuck in jobs that they're not really enjoying. And sometimes you don't see what your calling is in life. I think I've got my calling now and I'm making a difference. And it's the best and most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. But if you'd asked me when I was 24, would I be doing this? I'd have said you were crazy. So it's amazing where life takes you. And I'd say to people out there, go with it. Let life take you wherever it takes you. There may be some real humps and bumps along the way. We've all had challenges to overcome and face. But things happen for a reason. I think a lot of my life experiences have put me in a brilliant place today to help our customers and help our aging population discover that happier, healthier life. But without my life learnings and the challenges I faced, I don't think I would have been well-rounded enough as a human being to have the empathy, to have the compassion, to have the sort of patience and the understanding that I have and we've built into how we deliver the services, really. Because as young people, we probably don't have a lot of those skills. But I think going back to what we talked about in terms of the family framework I grew up in, you know, that framework was all about that love, that compassion, that caring, that togetherness and everything. And I think that a lot of those life skills plus life learnings, you sort of package up and you use whatever your calling is later in life. So to all the people out there wanting to make a difference, yeah, I would say that, embrace all of that and let it evolve and let it go and go with the flow. Sometimes don't be too prescriptive. You've got a really good idea in your mind, but it may not be the idea that is going to make your social change idea a reality. So really be prepared to evolve, embrace all the great things going on around you, and don't be too prescriptive. Go with it, because it will be eventually the best thing you've ever done in your life.
Great advice. Thank you very much, Anthony. Well, we'll leave it there. We're looking forward to seeing how this evolves for you. Wish you all the very best. And thank you again for being our guest.
It's been a pleasure, and I like the opportunity to share, to give back to other people out there wanting to make a difference in life, because I think collectively we've got so much to offer as social entrepreneurs who are in it for the right reason. They want to make the world we live in a better place, and people are doing it in different spaces and places and different agendas. Ours is healthy aging. And really, you know, we've all got to step up and make a difference. And I think we can. And collectively, I think it's the social movement in particular, the social enterprise movement, is a really, really strong and powerful way that we are going to transform the society in which we enjoy that happy, healthy life that we all deserve, really. So, yeah, it's been a pleasure to be here today and share some of my experiences.
Thanks, Anthony. Thank you very much. All the best. Well, that was a great conversation with Anthony. I hope you will agree. I really feel, reflecting on the conversation with him, I've learned a lot, but I also felt there was so much more I could have talked with him about. And hopefully we'll have the chance to again in the future. Really, in this wrap-up segment of this podcast, I want to do something new that I've not tried yet, and I would love to receive your feedback on it. And that is just to give you my key takeaways from that conversation. And again, I'd love to hear from you directly on email to hear what yours have been on this episode as well. So I've got 7 points noted down here. The first of which, and I'll try and get through these relatively promptly, is first of all, Anthony talked in that conversation about how golf still has a certain reputation associated to it, and it's trying to break down certain barriers, break down the stereotypes, and trying to get the message out to people that golf is good for you, I guess, in its simplest sense. And I find it so intriguing to hear Anthony talk about how, with what is such a good cause that he has going at golf and society, he's still running up against certain walls, barriers, mindsets, preconceived ideas of golf. And, you know, I applaud Anthony and his team for what they're doing. And, you know, it gives me hope for what we're trying to achieve here at Golf Yourself Healthy too. Point two, previous and precious golf memories. The story he told about having had the opportunity to play at Wentworth with his father, loved that story. And I'm sure you community members out there have got plenty of stories as well that, you know, you can look back on with nostalgia around having played golf with loved ones. The golfing spirit, in this case, of Anthony's father lives on. One of my favourite stories in that episode, and just about in any episode that I've recorded so far, was that story he told about his dad's putter. You know, first of all, going down memory lane there really afforded me the opportunity. And as you could probably tell, I got a bit choked up reflecting back on that fond memory I have of my grandfather and his shed and what he created in that shed. But hearing Anthony tell that story and how, leading me to point four, you know, taking inspiration from loved ones, how that putter is how Anthony's father walks with him, you know, today spiritually, and how when he hands that putter on to other people, his dad's putting prowess and his dad's spirit lives on through that putter. Quite incredible. And that really moved me, that story. And this point four, like I say, on taking inspiration from loved ones, you will know if you've listened to this podcast for a while now, or if you're dropping in for the first time, my inspiration for doing Golf Yourself Healthy was my son, Innes. And for me to meet people who are doing things in golf for the greater good, taking inspiration from someone that they loved, that's huge for me. And I hope that's moved you similarly. Point five, the eagle is landed. loved Anthony's story around a bit different. You know, he reflected on watching some of his customers through Golf in Society getting a hole in one. What a story, what a beautiful story. And I would have loved to have seen that. But then moving on to point six, remembering your why. I loved that. We all could learn something from that in and outside of golf, in life in general. Why do you do what you do? What gets you out of bed in the morning and why do you do those things? What's your motivation? And if we can always remember our why for doing any given thing in life, but especially when it comes to going after a cause or an inspiration or a dream, as long as you can always remember your why, you're on the right track. And then finally, my last point, point seven, when you find your purpose or calling, go for it. And you'll get there eventually. Whether that's finding your purpose or calling in the first place, but then when you do find it, it will take time for it to bear fruit. And I'm finding that already with Golf Yourself Healthy. I'm excited watching this grow, but the growth is slow and that's fine because I'm going to enjoy the journey and I hope you enjoy it too. So that's enough from me. Please get in touch. That's Kicking Chris, K-R-I-S, at golfyourselfhealthy.com. And watch out for the next episode coming out in 2 weeks from now, which will be with a friend of mine, Alex Frolish of Elevation Golfing Nation. Until then, always, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.